You're listening to God Deserves Better, a program dedicated to equipping the saints to create like our Creator. Welcome to God Deserves Better. I'm your host, Zach Lovelace.
And I'm your host, Jonathan Laura.
And we are coming straight from the Oscars, front row seat. We're in an after party right now. We're stolen away into some closet somewhere, and we're doing this real quick.
You could barely hear us right now. We're sorry about that.
Yeah.
Getting Oppenhammered, as Jimmy Kimmel said.
Yeah, Oppenhammered. Give me a break.
Very tame jokes, you know. It was okay for the most part, and then he was really happy about that Trump joke.
Pick up the spare time at the end to just shoehorn some anti-Trump rhetoric or whatever. No, so for those who are tuning in and don't know, this is what we're doing. We have just watched the 2024 Oscars ceremony, and we take it as fellow filmmakers who are pursuing excellence in the craft to watch what the world thinks is the best in the craft. And obviously, it's got its own politics to it and whatnot, as we kind of already mentioned. But even more than that, like, the Academy is made up of actors, writers, directors, sound people, all sorts of people. But they all like to give each other a giant golden pat on the back every year. So a lot of these ceremonies, whether it's the Emmys or whatever,
yeah,
you have to wade through a lot of that kind of stuff. And they always want to do the most important takes on things and, you know, seem
it's
virtue
just like
signaling.
Yeah, it's just like a political campaigning. They do campaigning for all the nominees and even people who, you know, to get nominated. So it's all political and just like, you know, high school class president voting, you know, it's popularity.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
For the most part.
But yeah, we decided that it would maybe be profitable to watch it and report back what we learned. And we were live writing notes as things were happening. And man, that's 3 hours of my life that...
It was more than that, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I had it paused for a good bit and could fast forward through the commercials, which was nice. But
there's a good Wayne Knight commercial you might have missed.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
Yeah. This is the Super Bowl of film, so the commercials matter, right? And I think... Yeah. All the research I was doing ahead of time, because I've kind of dropped off the face of the Oscar radar for a long time, did not care what was happening. For those who saw my social post on Instagram, I pulled from like the 2010 Oscars. That's the last time that I watched. So we're talking like 15 years. I tuned in here and there, but you know, I was like really, really into it back then. Now I'm definitely not. So it's been an interesting return. I will have to say, like, as a whole, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was, like you said, pretty clean, clean of any political stuff, of any like real pagan stuff. You see the Emmys and the Grammys, they'll have musical acts that are people literally dressed as Satan twerking and doing all sorts of crazy things. There really wasn't any of that here. So that was cool. Like, you know, kudos to you, Oscars, for not being totally satanic.
Yeah. It was a pleasant experience, and I actually also really enjoyed the lead up to it, because I've never really gone like this, like headstrong into watching all of the films beforehand. You know, I kind of just see the films that I'm interested in, and it was fun taking notes on films that otherwise I didn't care about, and just you know, seeing what they were about. And there were some really good films this year. It was a strong year compared to years past, like Coda and Nomadland winning. You know.
So. Dude, she pooped in a bucket in Nomadland. Okay. You don't get it. You don't get it.
Yeah. On command. Yeah. That's
on command.
That takes some skill. Frances McDormand.
By
the way, I know I've told you this, but to the audience, my mom and my aunt went to school with Frances McDormand in Manassas, Pennsylvania. Wow. So just a fun tidbit.
Small world.
Small world.
Winning Oscars for pooping in buckets, being irrelevant. Yeah, I think the the main question is, like, are they relevant? You know, it's one of the main questions anymore. I think for the past few years, it's actually kind of going to your point. It's gotten more European focused, more indie focused. You know, it's just these movies that the average person would not have heard of. Mm-hmm. So that's why this year was actually I mean, hopefully more people watched for
there was
the
Oscar's
sake anyway.
Barbie, Oppenheimer, you know,
yes.
was like
yeah.
the highlight of film of 2023. And so that being heavily recognized.
Yes. And that was yeah. cool. I thought it was very even handed in that way. They've had
I'm
that
surprised Barbie only won one Oscar. I really thought they were going to win more than that.
Oh, I figured they would win the song.
Yeah, that's. I thought they were going to win like set design. But yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised.
All these strong period pieces. It's just, you know, it's its own thing.
Yeah.
We can get into our review of Barbie because I watched it for this as well. Yeah. The lead up was fun. It was cool watching all these movies. Some of them I had to really buckle up and actually like hype myself up to watch, like Zone of Interest. More like Zone of Disinterest, am I right?
Well, that's the whole point of the film. We're going to spoil some films, by the way. So just this is your spoiler alert for Zone
yeah,
of Interest.
I mean,
not a lot happens in Zone of Interest. It was very highbrow.
It is very highbrow, but also like shallow at the same time.
Yeah. I mean,
there was like
the camera work, like the cinematography. You're so far away from the characters. I couldn't tell you what one character looks
so
like
true
except for Sandra Hüller because she was in Anatomy of a Fall and I saw that
yeah.
but I couldn't tell you who played who and
it made it hard
I
to
was very
to
distant
them, which I get
yeah
you know I don't want to like relate to a Nazi but
well, Jonathan Glazer the director said that the whole point I watched an interview he did he said the whole point was to show like these all these films about the Holocaust are always showing you the Nazis just like as a, you know, the all evil person. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to understand them. And so this film is kind of like showing you, hey, you're actually pretty close to being these people. So I thought that was actually really interesting. Like we're all like just a few steps away from being evil people.
Yeah, so the Joker said in Dark Knight, all it takes is a little push. But to kind of ground us into some structure, I was going to give folks who didn't watch it and are just using our keyhole experience here to look into the Oscars, I was going to give the list of the Best Picture nominees because we've already talked about a few of them. But again, you're getting like a real late night, off the cuff type of thing here. And I think that's cool. Like mm-hmm. you're really getting you're in the back seat with us on the way home from the Oscars. So Best Pictures nominations, there are 10 of them. I've always enjoyed when they only had 5. It made it feel way more special to be like, there were only 5 of these guys. Oh, it's so cool. Exclusivity, people. 10 is just a way to like give out this kind of pat on the back thing. But
I think it also might have contributed I was going to say the 10 might also be contributing to why the voters have been like less interested in years past.
Probably, yeah.
It's like more work for them.
It doesn't have a point of view. You know, it doesn't have a perspective, even though we all kind of understand what the Oscar voting body perspective is. Mm-hmm. It's diluting itself by saying, oh, we're going to bring these. We're going Black Panther along.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah. Anyway,
I'm going to read this list here and gives people some idea of what, and we can talk about which ones we've seen, which ones we haven't. So we have American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest.
Yes.
I mean, there are a bunch of other films that are nominated. Yeah, it's a, you know, for, like you said, for this year, pretty good year. I think movies are on their way back.
Yeah. I was actually really surprised with a lot of the messages in these films and how well they pertain to reality with a few exclusions. But for the most part, I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, they are grounded in reality for the most part. I do think mm-hmm. that it's maybe extremes. There are some that are just like even further than we've ever seen them before where we're trying to, I speak of Barbie now, try to preach something, even though it's a muddled sermon. So
it's a Christian cringe. We've said this in other mm-hmm. episodes specifically about Barbie, but it's a Christian cringe film for a different religion, essentially. The bad guy is... very clear who the bad guy is and who the good guy is. And it's funny because it's actually reversed because the good guy's actually the bad guy in the movie. But yeah.
You mean Ken?
No. I mean, just seeing like the ways that the Barbies treated Kens and everything. And so it's like,
oh, that's what I meant.
I don't have any sympathy for them. Yeah. Well, just the men in the real world were the enemies, like the Will Ferrell and
yes,
you know,
comically that one, so.
Yeah, the one guy is like, I'm a man with no power. Does that make me a woman or whatever? You remember that quote?
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh my gosh.
That was actually good because it's like, and again, this is where it gets muddled because it's like, are you actually saying that? Are you actually like, you know, looking at the camera and saying, hey, yeah, like that is
yeah, what constitutes. Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's where a lot of people kind of get wrapped up in it, where it's like a foggy crystal ball. They can just see whatever they want in that movie. So there are some people who I've heard pretty solid Christian guys be like, Barbie's got some interesting messaging. It's not as dumb and woke as you might think it is. And then you watch it and it's like, I think it's just bad filmmaking. Like,
yeah.
And I get, it's probably the hottest take that anybody could have about the film, because I think what people usually agree on is like, well, at least it's technically well made. And actually, I feel like the editing was super choppy for a comedy.
Writing was terrible. Like dialogue was
terrible.
Yeah.
It was really, again, you hit the nail on the head with it being Christian cringe, the bus scene or the bus stop scene where she looks at the old woman and is like, you're beautiful. And she's like, I know it. Like she says it a little too aggressively.
Yeah.
As if like this is a conversation that all women are having at all times. And so all the women in the audience are going to just be able to relate, which I guess probably in some ways is true.
I mean, beauty is very important to women and to be beautiful. So like, I guess I get that.
Of course.
But the whole film then again is trying to say like, oh, but that we shouldn't be wanting that. And it's just like very, again, very muddled. And
yeah, she kept having to apologize for being the stereotypical Barbie.
Yeah.
Even though it's like all about her. Anyway, I digress. Barbie did not show out in terms of the wins, as we saw. It won a total of one Oscar, and that was for the Billie Eilish song. The Ken song was also nominated, which is a fun one. Was gonna
win. Yeah, I mean, just the production that went into that performance was like
totally
heads and shoulders above the rest. Especially the Killers of the Flower Moon one. I don't know if you enjoyed that one.
Yeah. Dude, I wanted Killers of the Flower Moon to win Best Score.
Yeah, me too.
But
I don't think they won any.
Which is fine.
Did Killers?
You know what? You're right.
I think they won zero, which is crazy. I really liked it. I know you're not as fond of it as me, but you know.
No.
You're probably fine. But yeah, I think Score definitely should have won. I liked the cinematography. I don't think it should have won cinematography, but I don't really know what else it was better design, than.
Costuming, a lot of that period piece stuff.
What did Jack win Score again?
Fisk is the guy's name. Robbie Robertson did the score.
No, I'm saying who actually did win the score.
Oh, Ludwig Göransson for
Oppenheimer. Yeah, for Oppenheimer. Okay. They got 7 Oscars, they said, I think is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of crazy.
Oh, yeah. This night was definitely, this was Nolan's year. That was pretty much the unspoken narrative.
Yeah.
And so that's what was interesting for the first like 2/3 of the show. Oppenheimer wasn't winning anything. So I was like, okay, interesting. What's going on here? It's not the steamroller that people thought it would be. But they're usually the top 5 awards that you pick up, which are like best actor, best picture, obviously, best director, I think editing. Best screenplay, and then editing.
Yeah.
Cinematography might be floating around in there. But if you start picking up those ones in the night, you can kind of get an idea of where it's supposed to head. And so, yeah, I even told Kate, I was watching with her, and I was like, oh, yeah, Oppenheimer just locked it when Nolan won.
Yeah. Yeah, like, of course. Yeah. Best director, I think there's, I forget the stat, but it's like a pretty high percentage of best director also winning best picture.
It's essentially the same award. And I know that's like a weird thing to say, but the director's vision is the thing that makes it the best picture.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's like you're kind of enjoying whatever you're enjoying about the best picture. That's usually the case. So that only makes sense. But yeah, dude, let's run down our notes here, just so a little bit of a run of show, just chronologically.
Sure.
what did you think as the show went on? And we can start with Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see the holdovers. I really wanted to, but this week...
Oh, it's so good.
Just couldn't find the time to do it, and I have to rent it because I don't have Peacock, so...
You don't have Peacock?
No, I don't. But I love Paul Giamatti. I've been a fan of his since I was in high school. So I really wanted him to win.
Dude, I love PG
actor, but I'm glad the movie got some love with Davine.
Yeah. Davine, she won. She thanked God in her speech, which was cool.
She got no applause. She said, God is good. God is good. Twice. No one said anything. And then like the next sentence, she said like something about like just being yourself. And then the whole place erupted.
Oh, be yourself. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, not that you, whatever. You know, not that you shouldn't be yourself, but anyway, we can get into a whole soapbox sermon on that one. But I thought that was a cool way to open the show.
Yeah.
We had Davine winning Best Supporting Actress for her role in The Holdovers, which is probably my favorite movie from last year.
Wow. Okay.
It, even though I think I saw it in January.
Yeah. But favorite film from the Oscars lineup.
Yeah. Oh, it's really good. It's just a classic film. I love Alexander Payne. Outside of Downsizing sucks. Kate and I saw that on Christmas with some friends when it came out, the Matt Damon movie where he shrinks.
Okay, yeah.
Dude, that movie sucked. Like, I'm like, Alexander Payne is a strong writer, strong director, like good comedic sense, like, you know, a good.
What year did that come out?
Dramatic. Oh man, I don't know. 2019.
Okay.
No,
I don't remember that.
2018. Might have been 2018.
Okay.
But yeah, Alexander Payne deftly handles comedy and drama and mixing them both, and it's great. But then Downsizing is just a muddled mess, and it just makes me think that there was some studio interference or pushing him to do certain things. But it was all about climate change at the end. It's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? But anyway, so she wins. Divine wins. I saw Paul Giamatti shed a little tear for her, which was cool.
It's very emotional. She was crying when they just had her little opening speech. Like, I thought, listing the nominations.
That took forever.
Yeah, I thought
that took forever.
I was wanting to just see like little snippets, but
I know
they did
that
classic, in 2000.
Classic way to do it.
8 or 2009 Oscars.
Yeah,
they've probably done it many times since then. That's just the last time I remember. But it's a way of doing it.
Having the previous winners come up and say like ChatGPT meaningless statements to them.
You're an amazing person. Like,
like Mark Ruffalo, and you're just an all around amazing person. It's like, shut up. Like the average person at home already thinks you people are full of yourselves. And then you're out here just like, we're giving you this award because you're a good guy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Just let the performance speak for itself. Don't need to embellish it with. Your chat.
You were talking about movies that are connected to reality. And you were talking about movies that were connected to reality. And the Oscars is not connected to reality.
Yeah.
I think that's the big takeaway is like, it's all. And some of that's okay. You want it just like you want a Twinkie sometimes. You know, you want something that's just light and airy and campy and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And again, like we're passionate about the film. So, like we said, we want to see the pulse of, you know, the world and what they think is good and see how much it lines up with what God thinks is good according to his scriptures.
Exactly.
So it is fun.
Exactly.
But
it's very fake. You know, I think the Oscars can be redeemed, you know. I would still give out awards. Like if I was in charge of everything, you know, I would still give out awards for the best films of the year. That's cool.
Yeah.
But we can move on to the next category here. We had Best Animated Short and Animated Feature. Mm-hmm. The short, I didn't see any of them. It's really hard to see those ones.
I just wanted the Napoleon Dynamite directors to win an Oscar, but, you know, it's fine. Nacho Libre as well.
From 95 Senses or something?
Yeah.
Was that the name of the? Yeah.
I think so.
Say, or something. Again, these films are so obscure. And I was listening to some industry folks talk about the Oscars and just trends that have happened over the past few years. And all the smaller categories, they're there, like short documentary, live action short film, just fiction.
Yeah.
And you have animated shorts. Those are there to help people get discovered in some way. You know, like the system. Yeah.
Wes Anderson.
You go to a film festival. So. Yeah, I know. Well, that's actually the point, is that you have film festivals. You're supposed to like, hey, you and I made a short. We submitted it to Atlanta. And one of the Atlanta film festivals and plenty of other ones, their selling points is that they're an Academy Award qualifying film festival. So it's like you go there and you get your film shown. It's being shown in front of people who are going to maybe bring it to the voting body at some point, blah, blah, blah. It can't be some like podunk mom and pop film festival.
Yeah.
So it's a selling point. They get you to give them money to then take your film and show it. But then everybody in those categories is some big celebrity, or not even big celebrity, but like insider. They're already insiders. So it kind of just shows you the trend has been like, oh, we're going to close the door here a little bit. Even the Napoleon Dynamite people, I hate that they got snubbed. They didn't get their Oscar for that. But
dang it.
Jeez. I know, yeah. It just kind of shows you the state of things at the moment. And that's in the
it's all popularity.
That's
contest.
What's interesting about that category. Yeah. Is that it's not a discoverable thing anymore.
Yeah.
I heard a stat a while ago about Sundance that 96% of Sundance films are by referral. So it's not even 4% of them are just somebody that submitted who knew no one.
Wow.
And I find that hard to believe too. If it's already 96%, the rest of them.
Yeah.
I would. Yeah. Anyway.
Hardly worth mentioning.
So. A little bit of a cynical take on these smaller categories here. But the next big one was the animated feature, which I was happy to see The Boy and the Heron win.
Yeah.
We were right on that. But I like Miyazaki. Yep,
that's
true.
You could go see our Instagram. That was actually a gamble. Yeah. If you go to @GodDeservesBetter on Instagram, we're also on TikTok, YouTube. Mm-hmm. Please follow. We uploaded our predictions yesterday on Saturday. And I guess, I don't know, I'll share our grade at the end, but we got this one right. So
we did, which was a little bit of a gamble because what I had been hearing is that Spider-Verse 2 was steamrolling it a little bit. And it's like, shut up. Shut up about Spider-Verse 2. It's just, ugh. Actually, this is interesting. Johnny, you'll appreciate this. I saw this category, the animated feature, as being the battleground between old and new, kind of like the Michael Jordan and LeBron debate.
Okay.
That the old animation, like Miyazaki 2D,
you
know, by hand type stuff, it's got that like tough, like, you know, Detroit Pistons thing going for it. We're gonna elbow you and punch you and whatever. It's like real man's ball.
Yeah.
And then you get this Spider-Verse stuff, and it feels like LeBron to me. It just has this artificiality to it, you know, where it's like,
I'm not going to say all of them because they probably all can, but you don't need to know to draw, to do 3D animation. You don't have to know, even like some 2D animation, like motion graphics, like I do, I'm not a great drawer, but I do motion graphics and stuff like that, but
you do good though, man. You do good.
Thanks.
Don't downplay yourself.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. But yeah, like the hand-drawn Miyazaki style, that's tough. I cannot do that. And those people are uber talented. And it's way harder to do than 3D.
Yes. And it is a dying art form. And I think it might come back. It does in little pockets on the internet. I do see people trying to make 2D come back.
Yeah.
And the multimedia type thing that Spider-Verse has going for it is cool. And I like the first.
Yeah, there was probably a lot of 2D in Spider-Verse. I didn't see it per your recommendation.
You didn't see the second one? Or?
I saw the first
one. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you just soured it for me, and I was like, I don't want to see it. It's not worth my time.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I went on a souring streak that week.
Telling everyone he sees, don't see it, don't see it, don't see it.
Hey, you mailman, hold up. You Jehovah's Witness at my front door. I've got some news for you.
Yeah. What was you said like it was it seemed like it was all just a message about like closeted gay people and
that's
revealing it to their parents, you know? I don't know if that's all it was about.
That was someone else that we know that said that, but I agreed with that point that it's kind of dialed up in this, that it's this whole kind of blended family melodrama for most of the movie. And Miles doesn't actually fight anybody for a long time. We also get a lot of rehashed moments from the first film. So it's just this, like, the runtime it's just unearned, I think, is the biggest thing.
Okay.
If you love it and you're in it, then it's endearing and you're already in it. But if you go in like I do, and we talked about this the other day, Johnny, is that I think Christian filmmakers should foster more of a negative position when going to see anything.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's more often a positive position with things where it's, you know, everybody's chummy with everybody. It's like, a film has to earn for me. I start in at a negative position and the film has to get me to neutral or positive.
Yeah. And I think that happens as your taste in film is more refined. You will realize, like, you start to like less and less as your taste is more refined. And so, yeah, I'm just more like, okay, I'm here, impress me. You know, I'm coming in at that standpoint is pretty
well. And you get more things tied to you too. And because sure, the taste thing, you know, somebody could hear that and get kind of insulted. I feel like where it's like, oh, they think they've got better taste. Well, maybe, you know, if all you're eating is schlock, you know, all you're eating is McDonald's all the time. And you tell me this is an amazing meal. I think I'm borrowing that from Stories or Soul Food too. Yeah. That exact point where it's like somebody tells you McDonald's is an amazing meal and then you give them a steak and it's like, actually, can you try this instead? And then you really widen the palate, or maybe narrow the palate would be the better way to put it. But to have that negative position, because I think that's what most people went in thinking something like Spider-Verse is like dumb fun. It's like, no, the first movie was very poignant and powerful. And
it was good.
It was the perfect match of medium and message. Mm-hmm. You know, the new animation style that they were kind of pushing that really fit the characters, that kind of multimedia artist, graphic artist, graffiti artist type thing they had going. This one did not have that, but that element was ratcheted up to about 12 on a scale.
It didn't time with the message. As well,
no, and it's just, it got so distracting. Like every other shot within a scene was a different art style, and that sounds like this like kind of pull out soundbite thing that's good for marketing, where it's like they did a different art style. Every scene has a different art style, and it's like, oh, that's amazing. That's so much work. When in reality, it's harder, I think, to own a style like Miyazaki and do that really, really well. And consistently be recognized.
It might be more difficult, but it's no longer in service of your story. You're now serving yourself as the creator just to show off and show what you can do.
And, well, the point is to just break boundaries for no reason.
Yeah. Boundaries
as opposed to the first one, no broke one the boundaries about, for a you know. Reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first one, it's, oh, we're multidimensional. We're hopping in between dimensions. We have all these different Spider-Men and they need to be represented in a different way. That's cool. We take that and go crazy with it this time. That's not cool.
What about the T-Rex Spider-Man?
Oh, don't even get me started, man. Johnny wants this podcast to be about something else.
Well, yeah, we got to
other than the Oscars.
Congrats to Hayao Miyazaki. Sorry you couldn't make it, but
he didn't make it the first time for Spirited Away. So I think he just, you know, he's busy.
He's too busy for the master. Yeah, good for him.
So the next two we had screenplays. We had original and adapted. So original went to your boys, or I guess girl and boy. Girl. I don't know. Yeah.
For Anatomy Justine, of a Fall.
For Anatomy of a Fall. You watched that. I didn't see it.
Yeah. It was
deserving.
I think it was very well deserved. I didn't see the holdovers. That was our prediction. I just deferred to you on that one. But
that just tells you I saw the holdovers. You didn't.
Yeah.
You know. The holdovers is very good, but I didn't see it. Like that was a little bit one that's squeaked in there, a little bit more of my opinion rather than what I thought would actually happen.
Yeah.
A little bit of a toss up category, I think.
Yeah,
but
it could have gone either way. There were a lot of good films, like we said. I really liked Anatomy of a Fall. That was original screenplay, correct? Mm-hmm. Adapted went to American Fiction. So which is I didn't very see well that deserved. One. You saw American Fiction.
Yes, it's really, really good.
I really badly want to see it. I think that's the one that I regret not seeing the most.
But, yeah. Oh yeah, dude, it's audience and Johnny. My snobby recommendation is The Holdovers and American Fiction as probably the two best films of the year last year.
And Zach's with
Godzilla Minus One. Yeah, in my opinion, that's my snobby up here sniffing my own Christian fartistry thing going on. Those two films are really good and really well written. The American Fiction is about a black author who is writing like more sophisticated things, and he sees other black authors writing basically black trash, you know, Ebonics style characters and just ghetto style characters, what white liberals think black people are essentially. Mm-hmm. And so then he writes a novel out of spite to sell and in like with a pen name, and that blows up and he becomes this big character, and he has to, it actually is more about his life than it is about that actual satirical scenario, but
interesting.
It's well balanced.
Did Sterling K. Brown deserve the nomination, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. He's like kind of your, in that movie, he's your prototypical best supporting actor nomination. Okay. Like every time he's on screen, things light up. yeah. things are interesting. Like the main character is the sadder kind of Eeyore type character. Okay. And then he's his brother. Sterling K. Brown is the brother of the main character. And he's this gay plastic surgeon who like blew up his family because he's now living as a gay guy. And you can see it's like traumatically playing itself out. He's addicted to drugs and all sorts of stuff. But it's just a cool like off portrait look at the Black family, basically. And I really like it for that. And its commentaries on race are really interesting. And I would say not that woke. And so that's what's cool about it.
Yeah.
That you can get away with having that kind of story as long as it's within the woke framework, I guess.
Yeah. There's some hope out there. You know, people are getting it. So happy about that.
Yeah. So yeah, the writing categories, I think they both went really well.
Yeah, and the winner, Cord Jefferson, the writer for American Fiction, I liked that he shouted out to make more low and mid budget films. I thought that was really good. So, we definitely need more of that
up too.
Yeah,
we do.
Everyone agrees.
I don't know what the budget for American Fiction was, but I don't
not,
think it was that
not 200 so. Million. So you know,
yeah. exactly. We then kind of bopped through a few of these more technical categories like production.
John Cena's a bad actor. Costume. I just wanted to say that. The whole
yeah, he bit. Is a bad actor.
There's a whole bit with John Cena.
I did think the jorts joke.
Yeah.
yeah, where he's like, it's a whole callback bit where in the 70s, a streaker ran across the stage at the Oscars. And that was before the Will Smith slap, the most crazy moment of Oscar history. So they decided to try and recreate it, but then it failed, you know, because John Cena didn't want to walk across the stage naked.
In a joking way. Not really.
Yeah. Not really, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, the one joke that they snuck in there about that, I don't wrestle naked. I wrestle in jorts.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. If you like John Cena, you like WWE, like I do. That was like that's a little bit of a middle America joke. I would get that. Like, yeah, it's wrapped up in this whole other thing.
I think everyone, the American populace.
Oh, yeah, I know people got it.
The look of him with the jorts and the hat and the you can't see me.
Yeah, yeah.
Really wish we couldn't see him there, you know, but anyway.
I know.
Just wanted to, touch on that.
The Oscars is at its best when it's that campy, I think, though. When they have those types of things, they give people something to do rather than having these hosts read the teleprompter and try and be funny.
Octavia Spencer that stuff was always, Melissa McCarthy was
Yes, horrible. That one was garbage. Melissa McCarthy looked like Magneto. That was my note. I was like, all right. Some of the you know way these people were dressed, it just was crazy. Ariana Grande looked like two scoops of strawberry ice cream.
Yeah.
Not in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that look can be done in a good way. But yeah, it just... Anyway,
I was actually
joke.
I wrote that I'm really proud of Zendaya for not trying to be funny. She just said it for the cinematography award.
Oh, dude,
got in.
My reaction
got out.
To that was she did. She got in and she got out, which was nice.
Yeah,
I don't. I told Kate this. She caught most of my color commentary, but to the Zendaya thing for cinematography, I was like, I don't want to accept an award from you because I don't want to accept an award from a 10-year-old.
Oh yeah,
she just sounds like that. Yeah. She looks like that, and she just. And then there was a commercial for her new movie Challengers, which is total garbage, by the way. It's all wrapped around a menage a trois and blah blah blah, gross. And it's her trying to get out of her Disney kid phase, but it's like you already are, dude.
You're in Dune.
You just suck at acting. You just suck at acting.
You just play.
And
the
this
same
isn't going to make you a good actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the doubling back to the John Cena thing. It was a little bit of a humiliation ritual,
okay.
You know, like, cause he had to walk across the stage naked and that was kind of the point, but it was like this really, for my conspiracy heads out there, they'll get it. Okay. They'll get what I'm saying, but, it all had that stink of it. And that's a little
Wasn't
bit connected
his embarrassment to the ritual when he had to like apologize to China in Mandarin
in Chinese. That was embarrassing, but, I don't think, like, according to the...
That was pretty embarrassing, too.
To the Illuminati, they wouldn't think. They're like, no, we got to get him naked on stage. That's like...
I guess.
You think you're some big bad guy. We're going to get you
The Oscars logo is a triangle with the little statue in the middle. So it all makes sense.
It all makes sense, bro. Yeah. It all makes sense. Like I said, the same kind of thing connects with the Zendaya thing because it's her having to do this movie where she has this, like, crazy... obviously sinful sexual relationship with these two guys. It's like, we're debasing you on screen, and it's a way of like, we own you.
Yeah.
But they're going in thinking like, oh, I'm real, I'm gritty because I'm in this like crazy movie.
Women are being empowered, you know.
Yeah, that, yeah.
That
whereas like
that whole narrative.
Exactly. Empowerment is actually depowerment.
Yeah.
You know, and that's actually a lot of people's reactions to the movie Poor Things, which was I was actually really happy to see.
It won a lot of Oscars. I was surprised.
It did. It was this year's technical film, which I didn't think it. I
mean, cinematography like was pretty crazy. I thought it would at least win that, but
I know. I started reading the screenplay. Yeah. This is the little bit of the story behind this. I started reading the screenplay, and because I had read that it was kind of a bad movie, it's a lot about sex. So I was like, I'll just avoid it. Then it popped up on Hulu, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'll just watch it until I can't. I could not get very far. And then Kate and I both we had it on, and I was like, we both are like, this is just gross. So to give you an idea of why this is really gross, she is
playing. If you have children, listening, you might want to pause or, you know, wait till they're out of the room.
I would
out of the car. Wait till they drop
the car,
them off.
Yeah. Or if you're playing this on a loudspeaker somewhere, turn it up. the story is that she's this experiment of a Frankenstein style doctor, mad scientist guy, who saved her from, well, he didn't save her, but she jumped to her death. She committed suicide. She was this woman, this English woman. He gets her body, and you come to find out that you thought that he just like revived her, right? That he just brought her back to life, and that's why she's got the mind of a child. And she's learning at a super fast rate and whatever, whatever. It turns out that she was pregnant, and they took the brain of the baby and put that in her head. Oh, and so it's just this extra effed up level where it's like, this actually feels like pedophilia with just like one or two more steps.
So why?
Kate and I had real, real darkness on that movie we were watching. Just like, no. Like
no
once
thanks.
It got to that point, we were like, no, thanks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I was the stronger brother. I thought I could be the stronger brother, and I couldn't watch it for you guys.
I don't think any stronger brother should want to watch that.
That's fair. That's fair. But yeah, that took it to the next level. And I thought maybe it would have some other turn at the end where you find out that that's not actually the case, that the doctor was just making that up. Turns out that no, the rest of the movie is just her, discovering her sexuality. You know, she does various things, and then becomes liberated by going and selling her body for money.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
That's basically how the movie ends. Like,
that's the happy ending, I guess.
That's the happy ending. I wanted to get.
Did you finish reading it or like most of it?
No. I read the synopsis on Wikipedia after that. I feel like that plus enough of the screenplay, which had a couple typos in it. And I'm like, dude.
Come on, Yorgos. Was it you who wrote it?
This is it. Yeah. Okay. And I guess English is his second language. So I'm going to give that to him. But let's see. Manola Dargis from the New York Times said she's like the chief critic over there. She said she wasn't impressed. She felt the story became more monotonal, flat, and dull over time, writing that the movie's design is rich, its ideas are thin, and it isn't long into Poor Things that you start to feel as if you're being bullied into admiring a movie that's so deeply self-satisfied. There really isn't room for the two of you. And I thought that was like...
That's good.
Yes, that is so good. And then you get a little bit of the kind of like post-woke wars going on here where each different woke side is fighting itself. And I agree with this because they go on to say, another critic said, this isn't a sincere treatise on female sexuality. It's a dark comedy for people who carry around an NPR tote bag. Which I'm like, ooh, okay, finally putting that writing degree to work.
Dude,
And this is a lady from Vulture magazine or website, whatever it is. And she went on to say, sincere interest in the internal conflicts of its female protagonist. It's not interested in those things. Let's see. And the primary failure of Poor Things sex scenes is that the main character is an example of the trope of born sexy yesterday. There's actually a pretty new trope that people have been tracking for a while.
I'm not familiar.
Like it's a whole big thing, but basically there are these like kind of childlike women who are just sexy on accident. It's just, again,
okay.
We're on a lot of these lines here.
Yeah.
That are not good.
Yeah.
So in many ways, this reviewer goes on, the film demonstrates the limits of the modern cis male auteur's vision for and about women, particularly their sexual selves. This is another one from a reviewer from the San Francisco Chronicle. This is all on the Wikipedia page, but worst of all, Poor Things is dishonest. It purports to be a feminist document, but it defines a woman's autonomy as the ability to be exploited and not care. What version of feminism are these guys, the director and writer, trying to sell us here? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Then that's exactly what you're talking about. Like, I mean, I'm being empowered by being like by having sex with, you know, countless men or whatever. Yeah. It's like that's actually the difference between you and an object is getting thinner and thinner.
Yeah,
at that point. So
or an animal.
This
for that,
movie,
you know,
or an animal. Yeah, this movie is like the I think the bottom of the connected to reality.
Hmm. Yeah,
by trying to tell you these things. You know, so
that's
why we were feeling the aura around this movie of like, oh, I don't know about this one, you know, yeah. Reading about it, watching it, you know, the trailer told me everything I needed to know. It told me everything. Like I could, the images it was showing me, I knew exactly that this was the kind of movie it was going to be.
Okay. So, yeah, even Jimmy Kimmel, when they showed like the, when they come back from commercial break and they show a montage of each Best Picture nominee. He said, mm-hmm. Those were all of the scenes that we were allowed to show on TV for Poor Things. So,
yep. He's making a joke about it.
Yeah.
Dude, brutal.
Tying it into Poor Things, Emma Stone won. I thought that was crazy. That was probably the biggest shock for me of the night.
Me too. I literally had Lily Gladstone written down.
I was on Instagram literally, I think before the commercial break, I saw some account I followed said that it said Lily Gladstone and Emma Stone are neck and neck for best actress odds, with one being 67% Lily favored to win, and then like 30 something for Emma. Everyone thought it was going to be Lily, yeah,
it fits the woke narrative.
I'd rather
in the Academy
Lily,
Awards.
my true pick would have been Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall.
Mm.
I think she did really good. Her or Carrie Mulligan for Maestro?
Yeah, you saw Maestro too. Yeah.
Yeah.
You said she was kind of a deluded character in Maestro, though. It's like it's not even really her story.
No, I mean, it was her story. She was, it was really surrounded around her in a lot of ways. It was Leonard Bernstein's sexual addiction and how it affected her. And he was a bisexual man and. So basically, her character says she thinks that him resisting his bisexuality and his lusts, there's nothing wrong with
as the wife.
Yes, playing Felicia. It's making him suffer if he resists it. And so it's not worth it, basically. Mm. Who is she to get in the way of it? And so there was like this whole speech that she has with Leonard's sister. And so then later in the film, they divorced and they had this whole spiel and everything. Another really good quote. I'll circle back to that. But she says that she was arrogant when she made that statement for thinking that it wouldn't affect her. And I was like, yeah. That's very true. The most amazing quote in my mind that was in any of these films I have here marked line of the movie. It's a quote from Carey Mulligan that I think was the most powerful for me and probably for most Christians. There's a cuss word. I'll just censor it out. They're having an argument. And so he's trying to, you know, talk about like my sexuality. I'm allowed to do this. It's my truth. Basically, he says something along those lines. And then she responds, "Your truth is an effing lie. It sucks up the energy in the room and gives the rest of us zero opportunity to live or even breathe as our true selves. Your truth makes you brave and strong and saps the rest of us of any kind of bravery or strength. Because it's so draining, Lenny, to love and accept someone who doesn't love and accept themselves. And that's the only truth I know about you. If you're not careful, you're going to die a lonely old queen." And that's probably like the most anti-woke line I've ever heard in an Oscar film. I thought that was that was really cool.
That is cool.
And yeah, she sold it. She blended into the role perfectly.
Nice. The old lady makeup worked.
The young lady makeup didn't work. She looked, when she was playing her 20-year-old self, my wife and I were like, oh, she looks 40. But, you know.
Ooh.
But it was only for like the first 15 minutes or so, and it kind of goes away. But yeah, also Sandra Hüller in Anatomy of a Fall did really well. I guess we'll spoil this one as well. Spoiler alert for Anatomy of a Fall. But it's about a wife who is accused of murdering her husband. And she was the only one in the house when he fell from the top story of their house to his death. And so the entire film is a courtroom drama of them trying to accuse her, the opposition, that she killed him, because it makes the most sense to them, people who don't know her, and her lawyer and her son. Ultimately, the son, that was a big reveal at the end, that it was probably suicide from the dad. She did very well. I also wanted to say the son, the role was Daniel. I forget the name of the actor, but he should have been nominated for best supporting actor based on your criteria. Like we said, whenever he's in the room, like whenever the scenes surrounding him, it was intense. And this is like an 8-year-old kid, and his cries were very convincing. He's playing a partially blind character, and he did that very well. I believed it. I think that was the biggest snub, in my opinion, for people who didn't get nominated.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I got to watch it. I haven't seen it.
Really good. Really good. Also, the dog Messi, they showed him. He was a better supporting actor. Legit. He was a better supporting actor than Ryan Gosling. That's not hyperbole.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, yeah, dude. Duh. So what did we hit? We kind of jumped around a little bit. We talked about Poor Things.
I think we should go through the actors.
That went to Emma Stone.
Let's get through the actors, directing, and all that.
Downey Jr., it was his year. You know, this is a good enough role outside of the Marvel movies. Everybody knew he was a great actor, knows he's a great actor.
Everyone knew he was going to win.
Yeah, he should have won for Tropic Thunder, though. Just being totally honest, going off of our criteria for best supporting.
No, that was the year with that was the year with Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. So. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Anyways.
But it's so good. Anyway, but yeah, so and he did great. He did do good. I don't think anybody else, I mean, not that they didn't come close, but he was just kind of the juggernaut in that. He was probably advertising a lot for it, campaigning a lot for it.
I remember just walking out of the theaters, so much buzz, like on social media, like, oh, this is definitely going to win best supporting actor from RDJ. Yep. So, you know, people
and
he's
good. He's a good bad guy.
Yeah.
So, you know,
don't really understand his motivations.
The,
get into that's the writing of
a whole other thing, man. We could do an episode about each Oscar nominee. No, but yeah, we don't have all night. Then best supporting actress, we talked about that early on. Best actress, best actor going to Killian.
Yeah, again, not called PG. It.
Again, it was Oppenheimer's night to lose something. It wasn't, you know, that was the story going into it, was that they were going to steamroll with like 13 nominations overall, which is one shy of the most.
Wow. Yeah. Was that Lord of the Rings, I think?
No, I think they only had 13 as well. Titanic, I think maybe. And then maybe Ben-Hur. Okay. That's off just the top of my head. But so Killian deserved it. I think he, like looking at some of the clips that they pulled and just all the stuff that they were showing me again, because it's been a minute since I've seen it. I was like, yeah, he did a really good job. So
yeah, he did.
First time
he
nomination.
Looked weird. I don't know if you picked up on that. His cheeks looked a little too rosy and like had like these weird like cheek lines. I don't know what you call those. The he looked a little weird.
No, he looked like he put on a little bit of weight.
Maybe
that's
what it was
for a role. I don't know, because he did seem thin in Oppenheimer.
Yeah, it was a stark contrast.
I'm wondering.
Yeah, that's just what he normally looks like.
His normal. Yeah, exactly. Kate said that Ryan Gosling's makeup looked weird during the Oscars.
Yeah, I could see
that.
Like,
what's up with his makeup? It's like, I think they did a little bit of eyeliner on him. I don't know. It's an interesting question of like, would I wear makeup if I was ever on stage at the Oscars? Depends.
I probably wouldn't. I would do the little wipe the grease off my face, you know.
That's probably Christoph Waltz is pretty shiny.
Yeah.
The whole time. And I mean, they all gave, again, going back to the runtime of the show, could have been even shorter for the Oscars if they had cut out these best supporting, or they, for any of the actors,
yeah,
like other actors talking about them.
All the again, major categories, while, I think.
It all started to just blend together where you're like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like,
I didn't
again,
care.
A few of the pops are from Devine with Lupita mentioning that she'd wore her grandmother's glasses during shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was a bit of trivia I did not know. And
yeah, more of that.
Then more of that, please. What is mm-hmm. it? Nicolas Cage for the best actor one. He was talking to Paul Giamatti. That was his guy to talk about. And he said he wore the contact. And it's like, okay, that's cool. Give me a little bit of trivia. And his little joke
from the
about
holdovers.
Like, would I have done that? Yeah. would I have done that? Of course I would have done that. But I, you know, whatever. And
but
it just
he did it.
Laugh. It's like, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And Giamatti's just a slightly unsung.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my big pick. And that was our formal pick.
Yeah.
But I'd heard that it was pretty close between him and Killian. I know it was, there was still Oppenheimer was a juggernaut, but there's enough of like the Giamatti heads in the audience.
Yeah.
Like old
Academy
type guys. Yeah.
That
could have snuck him in.
He's a really good actor.
He is.
I would love to see Killian Murphy in the role of Big Fat Liar.
Yeah. Let's see him pull that off.
Yeah.
I know that Giamatti could pull off. Giamatti could be Oppenheimer any day of the week.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's totally true. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Killian couldn't have been, the holdovers guy.
Yeah. Well, that might have to do with his age, but you know,
yeah, still.
Anyways.
Anyway. No, what I was just saying is cinematography. So mm-hmm.
That was
do you think that Hoyt van Hoytema for Oppenheimer deserved it?
It was good cinematography.
Poor Things.
Yeah, I thought Poor Things was gonna win just because of how out there it was. Like the
I saw enough of the movie to appreciate it for that. Like it was weird.
It was weird.
But it worked. It did work. So
yeah.
But rethinking about Oppenheimer, I'm like, no, they shot that on film and there's all these practical effects and he was lugging an IMAX camera around on his shoulder. That's cool. And
yeah,
it's a little bit of a build up for Hoyt where he's done a bunch of movies that are really good.
I think he did Tenet
before.
He did Dunkirk.
Yeah. Yep.
No, I don't think he did
Interstellar.
Tenet. I think he only did Dunkirk.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Maybe he did. Who's his typical cinematographer for Christopher Nolan?
It was Roger Deakins, I thought.
Okay.
He's used Deakins in the past.
Yeah. I'm getting confused, but anyway.
Yeah. They all start to blend together.
Yeah.
But yeah, the rest of these, I don't think the best song being the Billie Eilish one from Barbie. That was their one win. I saw that coming. It's a little bit of the James Bond thing, which was funny that it was also Billie last year.
Yeah.
That she won for the James Bond song because that's kind of how they treat ever since. I mean, they've done it for a while, but with Skyfall they did that.
Yeah,
it's like that was Bond's like 50th year and that was kind of their like, oh, here you go, here's this one Oscar we'll give you because you're too schlocky of an idea, but we'll give you like you're too popcorn, but we'll give you this one thing that and it was the emotional beat of the movie where Barbie is talking to her creator. That's when the song is playing, so that's the most more meaningful than the Ken song anyway.
Sure. The more meaningful of the two, but they put a lot of money into that Ken performance.
Oh, dude. So, you at the Oscars or you just in the movie?
And, I mean, I guess in the movie too, but at the Oscars, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think everyone really wants this one to win, but you know,
it was definitely more popcorn song. That's the Oscars wanting people to tune in. Even if they don't think something's going to win, they're going to pour money behind it. That's why I thought they were going to have best supporting actor at the beginning. Cause it's like for your average person watching, seeing Robert Downey Jr. Oh, Iron Man. And I told Kate, I was like, I want him to end his speech saying, I am Iron Man. And he walks away. That would have been amazing.
Snap.
Yeah. anyway, but the acting awards went the way that we thought they would for the most part. The technical stuff kind of went to Poor Things. Nolan won Best Director. Again, that's a little bit more of a career thing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was his year, you know.
He should have won for probably like a couple other films, but you know, this one wasn't his best film in our opinion.
That's usually what ends up happening. You know, it's like they don't hit them the year that they deserve it.
Yeah.
Because they're always doing the when like somebody deserves it thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just going for what the actual best, and that's that's just the problem, I guess. But somebody put out an idea a while ago saying that they should do the Oscars every 5 years. Which would actually be like way cooler.
That would be cooler. Yeah.
Then the 10 nominees would make sense. You get two from every year. I don't know. Like, that's for Best Picture, I guess. But, or you could go bigger, but then the runtime
for all of them.
I don't know.
make it a multi-day event, you know. I don't know. Maybe like a bracket thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
I don't know how that would work. But people were just saying, like, if you look at them over time, they usually do overlook movies that are more culturally relevant over time. But some, like, kind of intuitive thing that I've picked up is looking at, if I was the Academy, what movie would I want to be like, that's what I want people to remember from this year? And Oppenheimer was clearly the one. It's sophisticated. It's historical. It has a little bit of a message, just enough of a message. I mean, it's most.
And it's made by Christopher Nolan, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And then we have a great filmmaker who we've wanted to honor for a long time. It's like, there's no better opportunity than right now.
Yep.
And you compare that with other things, and it's like, nothing really comes close to that. So I think that's why we got what we got.
Yeah. So overall, we got, as GDB, we got a 60% on our predictions. Went 9 of 15. Nice. Not bad.
Nice.
Kind of bad, but not too bad. Could have done way worse.
Yeah, you know, we still failed the class.
Yeah. No, that just shows that, you know, we don't have our finger quite on the pulse, I guess. Which is fine.
Oscar pulse.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have picked Johnny, most of those people for who I wanted to win anyway, like we've said. So, you know.
Yeah. I would say my favorite moment of the night, and then you tell me yours, and then we can get a little bit of our GDB kind of postscript thing going here. Mm-hmm. My favorite moment of the night was Godzilla Minus One winning.
That was my favorite moment. Yeah. I literally have, I'm happy however the rest of the night goes. So.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Those guys, they were so happy when they got nominated, when they're on the shortlist, I think is actually what it was. Then when they formally got nominated, they were.
Yeah.
And then the guy was doing a speech and he could barely speak English. Like, dude, let's go.
I have a note here that there were a few people like pretending to be like nervous and quirky. Like, they're like, oh my gosh, this is daunting. And like, they just say that under their breath and like no one laughed, you know, it's not cool to like do that anymore. But like the Godzilla people were truly that, and it was a lot more charming.
I mean, they're visual effects guys. They probably never get outside.
So wasn't the director just the one who did visual effects, or there's like the, I remember the budget being like super cheap because of that or something.
Yes, I'd have to look up the exact thing, but the director is like a visual effects head as well. So I think whether or not he was actually formally on that team or just that he previously had done it, and so would have been able to like cut the corners or whatever. But that movie's just, it's so good. Mm-hmm. Just classic cinema. Kind of, again, my top of the year is Godzilla Minus One, The Holdovers, and American Fiction.
Yeah. Godzilla Minus One might be up there for me as well. But yeah, now I wanted to, in light of all of the Oscars, we went through all the important categories to us, at least. I wanted to highlight a new category that the Oscars should integrate, and that is the most glorifying to God. Which film was the most glorifying to God? This would be the way to wrap the
to night. The triune God of the Bible.
Yes, the one true God. That's the Christian God. Yes,
of course. So yeah, so, we get that new category alongside the casting category they announced.
I thought they were going to do the stuntman one too, but I guess that's still not a thing.
I don't know what happened. They did. They maybe just were celebrating stunt people, but they weren't. Yeah. I don't know, whatever. But yes, the most glorifying to the God of the Bible. Now, which movie from this year, we retroactively are applying it to this year, right? So before they can actually do it. So which one, in your opinion, that you saw?
Yeah. So I didn't see all of them, like I said, but the one that I think was the most glorifying to God was Anatomy of a Fall. And I'll explain myself. Heavy spoiler talk. So if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend you see it before listening to this. But towards the end, I mentioned earlier, they bring their partially blind son to testify in the courtroom. And he knows his parents better than anyone else in the room. And there's this whole build up, the whole movie. They're making a very good case, and you're starting to believe it, that maybe the mom killed him. And then, but you still are endeared to her. It's from her point of view. And so you're like, she can't, you know, you really are still rooting for her. So you're just waiting for that one thing to like, you know, to go right for her. And so he gets up on the stand, her son, and he talks about a time where his dad talked to him. And he was talking about the dog, but he was really talking about himself, where he says, you know, your dog, he's really dedicated to you. He really loves you. But one day he could go. You really need to cherish him, because you never know. He might run off. He might, you know, whatever. He might, you might lose him. And he just goes on this whole thing about that. And you could tell he's really talking about himself. And the boy's like, all this stuff, you get all the facts and the details, you look up, and it's talking about the what. But we really need to get back to the why. What makes the most sense? Why this makes the most sense? And it makes the most sense that my dad would have killed himself than if my mom would have murdered him. And I think that was a really good, and from me, a Christian, taking away from that is, we get it wrapped up into all the facts about, like, oh, you can look up like maybe certain fossils and whatever, and like all these stats and findings that might look like there is no God, proof of there, that there is no God. But you have to really step back and think about why. Why is there this world here? Why do we exist? You know, what makes the most sense here? Why do societies thrive under certain principles that are shared in, you know, by civilizations that have no contact with each other? You know, just certain things. The thing that makes the most sense is that a God exists. And I think that's why I would choose that movie. It's most glorifying to God.
That's cool. Yeah. That's interesting, because the logic seems to hold up with according to reality. That's what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one. I haven't seen it, but that's kind of how we split up the best picture stuff, is that I'd watch some, you'd watch some. Mm-hmm. My pick is Barbie.
Nice. I like where you're going with this.
I'm not actually going with that one. No, it's just a joke.
Okay.
But I can't. I mean,
you can. Yeah.
I get.
I totally know the case the bit for
that
it.
You think I was going to make? Yeah, exactly. It's so overwrought at this point. We weren't around as a show to like hit the Barbenheimer boom. So you know, I don't want to try to hit boom. So many well-trodden territory here. But I would say, honestly, I really like, or I think Godzilla Minus One is probably the one for me that is most glorifying to God. There's just a unity with man that you see, which I get. I don't know. You're really getting my like top of my head thoughts on this movie. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a minute, but
it's a good choice.
The feeling I left the theater with mostly after Godzilla Minus One was hope. Whereas I think a lot of other movies, Killers of the Flower Moon, there's a lot in there that I think is cool about justice and whatnot. And maybe little vignettes within these stories that we see highlighted by the Oscars that are good, but generally speaking, the more kind of genre a movie is, the more genre a movie is, the more it has to kind of stick with God's reality, because these are time-tested boundaries and categories that people understand, like a horror movie, and you can kind of play with the tropes or whatever, but there's a giant monster and they need to kill it, and people band together and they are resourceful. There's a kind of patchwork family that is the center of the film. I've said this before, that kaiju films a lot of times are boring when you're looking at the people, because what does it matter when I'm looking at a giant monster fight another giant monster or whatever? It's way more interesting to do that than it is to watch some human melodrama happening. The small scale thing pales in comparison to the large scale thing, whereas they balance the small scale thing really, really well against the giant sized thing. And Godzilla is a metaphor as well for atomic bombs and just like fear and whatnot. So this idea that humankind comes together and in a hopeful unity to fight an evil that is bigger than themselves, I think is cool. Again, it's hopeful.
Sneaky pro-life movie, I was going to say.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. That was like a whole big speech at the end, is like how much their country doesn't value their people's lives.
That's right.
And
that's right.
We're going to not do that this time in their final strike against Godzilla.
That's fascinating. Yeah, exactly. That's a really good point. And masculinity, too, is on display in that movie.
Overcoming cowardice, like, yeah.
Overcoming Cowardice, the main character is a kamikaze pilot who couldn't go through with it. He couldn't crash into a U.S., you know, aircraft carrier or whatever. And so he's living with this guilt that he couldn't live up to the highest calling of his nation during the war. And the movie is building up, spoilers here, building up for him to do the same thing. But then the team around him rises up and actually helps him not have to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's all these men who are like, we need to defend our home. We need to defend our home country. And that is not something that you see or hear anywhere. Or if you do, it's bad here in the U.S. anyway, for people to want to defend their home.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Jimmy Kimmel would say, make America great again.
You need to open your home.
Oh, you're right. You're right, man. Not too far from us, Lakin Riley was killed. So, you know, it is kind of a sore subject for folks. So that is a real prescient theme, that idea that we're going to be, that men need to be first and foremost protectors. And that's like the whole thing, the whole arc of the main character. And the journey he goes on and becoming the kind of foster father for the family that they've created. So that's my pick for the most glorifying movie of 2024.
Thank you, Leo. As Ernest.
Yeah. No. I just like money.
I do like that money, sure.
Yeah. So that kind of wraps up our Oscar 2024 recap, if you will. We are back at home. We just came from the Oscars after party. We were in the limo on the way home. We got our mics out and we cranked out this episode for you guys.
You're welcome.
We're back at home now. Yeah, you're welcome. You don't have to watch the Oscars. not that you ever had to.
Yeah.
But for filmmakers, it is an interesting thing to see what the industry, what people are actually, people who get paid to do what it is you want to do, are celebrating each other about. And there are actually, as a whole on a trend, I feel like movies are, I would say it's probably like a 70-30 split, 30% God honoring, 70% not, in terms of the movies that were depicted. It depends on how far you want to go, how many hairs you want to split.
Yeah.
But
I walked away feeling a lot more, a lot better about the Oscars than I thought I was going to after tonight. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did too. That's a really good point. Like Kate and I had a good time. You know, we like watching all the celebrities do stupid stuff and just our little commentary. So even if it is a little bit of a hate watch, it still was fun. And then it was fun to build up beforehand of watching the movies and even finding out where your conscience is at in terms of what you're watching. Obviously this is stuff that we're thinking about too, and that we're going to have episodes about. And we can actually talk about very specific movies like Poor Things, and why you should never watch movies like that.
Yeah.
And until next time, let's get out there and work heartily for our good and gracious God, the Redeemer of men. Thank you for listening to God Deserves Better, a production of Pemmican Studios.